to The Scope with Dr. K. I'm Dr. Kaczynski. We're going to open the show today, as we always do, by stating that the goal of this show is to present you with a broad scope of value-based care issues, mainly involving the field of gastroenterology, but sometimes outside of GI as well. We're moving back to the provider space today. Our guest is Angelina Collins, a board-certified adult nurse practitioner who cares for patients within the Inflammatory Bowel Disease Center at UC San Diego. Angelina has over 17 years of experience treating people with IBD. She is passionate about delivering patient-centered care for those who are newly diagnosed, for those who have longitudinal disease and complications, as well as patients in clinical trials. Prior to joining the staff at UC San Diego, she was a gastroenterology nurse practitioner at Genesis Gastroenterology for 11 years. So she has knowledge of treatment of IBD in the private practice space, as well as an academic medical center. She completed her nursing and master's degree in nursing from University of San Diego Hahn School of Nursing and Health Science. She is a member of the AGA, the ACG, and the Gastroenterology and Hepatology Advanced Practice Providers and California Association of Nurse Practitioners. She belongs to everything. Angelina has been a board member of the Greater San Diego and Desert Area Chapter of the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation since 2015, and currently serves as the Healthcare Provider Committee Chairperson for this organization. I heard Angelina speak at a recent conference in Southern California, and after listening to her, I thought that her passion for the care of patients with IBD would be great for this show, so I invited her to be on. Welcome to the show, Angelina.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate being here. And as I was saying before, when we first met, I just appreciate that you really support, you know, advanced practice providers, nurse practitioners, and PAs, and you're seeing the value. I really appreciate that.
Well, we can't practice today without you. So I think it's something that every doctor has to appreciate. I'm going to start out, as I usually do in an interview, by asking my guests to tell the listeners about themselves in their own words. How did you get to where you are, Angelina?
Probably, I mean, I think the simple things is, you know, just curiosity. I ask a lot of questions and constantly ask a lot of questions. I think persistence, definitely, and probably hard work and maybe a little bit of luck in having met some people along the way to really help me. You know, those are, I think, the things that are the summary things of what I would say, like, what is a new nurse practitioner, a new PA in GI need? Like, you need, you know, sort of those things. But how I got there was, you know, essentially the long story is that I happened to be a nurse, a registered nurse working at on a medical oncology floor at Scripps Memorial Hospital in La Jolla. I met Bob Goldklang, who's a local gastroenterologist, had a well-established practice. And I approached him. I was finishing up my nurse practitioner degree. I had some hours I could do in specialty. And I asked him if he would be a preceptor for me, as I felt like I just really did not get enough GI experience in my NP program. I had a job lined up in an internal medicine practice that was a great practice, well-established practice, but I, you know, GI was just something that I found lacking in my own training. And he said, sure, come hang out with me. And I said, great. Well, after that one semester working together, he offered me a position, and that essentially led to a partnership that we worked together for over 11 years. And it was really hard, you know, when initially, I think in some ways to like learn GI, in some ways it was very easy. And one thing that I really kind of quickly realized was that as the practice was growing, as the number of patients were growing, it was such an awesome opportunity to like just expand my skills. He was a fantastic teacher. He was a great supporter. He gave me the support and encouragement to learn, and also the trust to help him with patients that were really challenging. And I think I quickly found out that I just really loved IBD patients. There was such a huge unmet need, especially in any practice, I think, but especially with what I was seeing, that the patients got sick, you know, super quickly. They needed immediate attention. They needed lots of follow-up care time. And it was just a really interesting and fascinating group of patients for me. The trick was there were no structured programs for APPs. You know, there was nothing out there at the time. So I was really just fortunate along the way that Some of the medical science liaisons really just, I would ask them questions. They would bring me articles to read. They saw I was really interested in learning everything I could about taking care of patients that had Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. And that really helped me to grow my knowledge. And then I had some really persistent patients along the way. Two of them were on the board of the local Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, and they really would not take, they asked me to serve on the board with them. And I said, you don't need me. What do you need? And they just were so persistent that eventually I said, okay. As long as you know, like, I'm not sure what I'm bringing to the table here, but, and they said, just show up. We just want you here. And that really has just served, I've served on the board now since 2015, and that's been really rewarding to be a part of that community and be involved with my patients at a different level and trying to provide additional help and support and services that I can. And meanwhile, while all that was going on, you know, Bill Sanborn moved from Mayo Clinic in Rochester to the University of California in San Diego, and he was hosting a quarterly community-based IBD kind of combination of like journal club, case presentation club, and I just never missed a meeting because it was so fun. And not having been to a fellowship program, this was, you know, the closest thing I could see to like training, and it was amazing. And when he asked me to be a part of his team, it was one of those opportunities I couldn't turn down, but it was hard to leave Dr. Goldklang, of course, because yeah, he had helped me so much along the way and was such a huge supporter.
Well, Angelina, I think your story is one that should be followed by others. Medicine is just such an enormous thing to try to master. And what do we produce in medical school and in your training? We produce generalists, and you're faced with that just enormous body of information that you have to master. But I think you did something really, really intelligent. You narrowed your focus into GI, then you even narrowed your focus further into IBD, and you've created a niche for yourself that is one that I think you can just make your career forever out of it. I don't think it's ever going to go away. I think what you did in your training was really, really smart.
Well, thank you. Part of it, I think, was just, you know, luck being in the right place at the right time. But I think really when other people ask me, it's like that support. It may be funny to think like some of the medical science liaisons were the ones that helped me, but there's one that I have kept up with. She's moved to different companies and she just brought a wealth of knowledge and is an immunologist at training. And that really helped me to find information that I was really looking for. And I wanted the details, and that was awesome along the way.
Yeah. So frankly, the patients sometimes can't tell the difference between their APP and their physician. But from your viewpoint, what would you see as the differentiating factors? What does an APP bring to the table that maybe the physician does not?
I think that these are, to me, it's not an either or answer, right? It's not like you get one or the other. To me, I see this as a team-based approach. And I think that was the lecture I was giving the day that, or that was a topic, right? I was discussing when you and I first met, right? Is that it's a team-based sport, right? This is not, it's not about, you know, one or the other. It's about how do we complement one another and what are those things we're bringing. For me, having a nursing background and sort of having the grounding roots in nursing and thinking about the whole entire patient, I think was really helpful. So the psychosocial factors that people are bringing to the table, what does nutrition look like, lifestyle, all of those, but especially with IBD, you really have to have a super strong understanding of the disease process and the medications and the potential complications. But how is that affecting all the spokes of their life? And I think sometimes I'm just very willing to discuss those and bring those up with the patients, hopefully in a way that is easy for them to answer, in a way that is understanding and empathetic and not in a way that's overly pointed or anything like that, because everyone's going through challenges in different ways. And how do we bring those challenges so that everyone feels connected in that way and that they're not alone in the process, I think is probably important. And hopefully I do that. You know, you really, like, to be honest, it's like, well, how well am I doing that? But that's my goal, is to do that in a way that is helpful to our patients, to have them really realize, especially when they're on their worst and darkest of journeys in their Crohn's and colitis, you know, process, that they're not alone and that we're here along with them. And there's other people that have been through this as well.
So the purpose of this podcast is everything about value. You know, how do we increase value? And so if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, the value you bring may be a translational one between the complexity of the illness and what the patient is capable of hearing. And you're also adding value in the engagement with the patient.
I think you said it beautifully. Much more succinctly probably as well, which is great. And I think that it's that piece that's so hard, right? It's that piece that's so hard to put a value to sometimes, that engagement piece, right? What is the best way we can take care of our patients and have them feel that they're getting quality care, right? Now we're being graded on what does quality of care look like, but also hitting the points of, did we get patients to clinical remission, endoscopic remission, biochemical remission, like all these things that we're supposed to be doing at the same time to help their disease process. So I think what I'm saying is, it's not just some ways that I think you're right. I mean, I think you're right. What we're trying to do is enhance care, and what we can bring is that patient engagement, and hopefully get them. We can probably see them back sometimes with shorter intervals. We might have longer visits, which can be really helpful, especially with complex care. And those are the pieces I think that really help, especially with caring for patients with Crohn's and ulcerative colitis and those really complex, you know, those really complex states.
And let's hope that we don't tighten the times of your visits so that you're not capable in the future of providing that personalized care that you adhere to so well from your nursing background. That's an important point.
Would love you to speak to my administrators who don't exactly see it in the same way. So I think that's a constant, constant shuffle.
We are in this RVU-based production world. I've spoken at the AGA's APP conference that we have every year, and I've always enjoyed it. I've never seen so much note taking in a room. I can speak to physicians, and I'm not going to see that degree of note taking. So I know you represent an engaged group of people who really want to find their spot in the value-based continuum. Where do you see APPs going in the future? Where do you think it's going to go?
I think it's going to continue in the trajectory that it's going. I mean, I see this as there's a booming market now for nurse practitioners and PAs. And I think we'll probably see a lot of similarities with where things are going right now. Gastroenterologists will probably be needing to be in the endoscopy suites and performing procedures. And the nurse practitioners and PAs are going to be in the clinics seeing patients and engaged with patients. So I think there will continue to be a lot of that. What has been really incredible is that there is more recognition of what this looks like and how much the nurse practitioners and PAs are taking care of patients. And there's more dedicated training programs that are available for GI nurse practitioners and PAs especially. So like you mentioned, the AGA, the ACG, Milestone APP, I mean, there's a lot of programs out there. And I think a lot of people are seeing the value and seeing APPs I think everyone's becoming much more aware of what we are capable of doing. But at the same time, there's going to be this huge need for training, because that's probably one of the biggest areas right now that I think a lot of new APPs struggle with, right? So it was me certainly when I started, and it was probably harder then because I had to figure out how to train myself in some ways. Yeah. I had support along the way, but I didn't have a structured program. So all of these structured offerings that are occurring within, you know, like I said, AGA, ACG, these are fantastic ways because this at least condenses some of the information, makes information readily available. You don't have to run around on the internet looking for things. I mean, but there's guidelines now that didn't exist exactly in the same way that they used to. So there's so much more of that, but I think that the training will probably need to tighten up a bit to get a more, even more solidified group.
I've felt, not that we want to add more years of training to people, but you know, a rotating internship at the completion of your training, because you don't know, you really don't know. And some people aren't as fortunate as you to have found something they could really grow in. You find something they go into and then they don't like it, and it takes them 6 months to a year to change. And, you know, I think a rotating internship might be a good idea.
Oh,
Go
you
ahead.
bring up a good point. There are now preceptorship programs, like the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, for example, has sites for inflammatory bowel disease anyway, where they offer those. GI Health Foundation has done that as well. So there are some groups that are starting to do that and offer it. There's sometimes limited positions, right? So it depends on if it's a year of feast or famine, whether, each person will get those positions. But thankfully, there are groups that see the value in doing that. And I agree. I think if there had been programs like that when I was starting out, it would have been fantastic. I don't know if how much I would have been able to travel for a full year to do a program somewhere else, because I was further along in my family situation at that point, but I think it's a nice additional way to augment and weigh. And some of this is being produced online too, right? There's Zoom meetings, like Milestone APP is all done through web-based learning and Zoom meetings. And that's a fantastic way to do it as well.
I know at the AGA, I'm on the AGA governing board, and we are looking to build positions inside the leadership of the AGA for APPs. You have an interesting experience that that you alluded to in the intro, where you spent a large number of years in private practice,
Yes.
and you migrated to the academic environment, which looks like that's where you're going to end. But tell us the difference. What's the difference of the role of an APP in a private practice setting versus an academic setting?
I think the roles are in many ways really similar. So I think that is like first and foremost, we're focused on taking care of patients, right? I think in the private practice setting, I was really fortunate to be in. As I started out, it was really just me and one doctor who then grew it into a much bigger practice. So I started at a time when we could pivot. We could innovate. We could pivot quickly, and so that was great. And having my supervising slash collaborating physician be someone that I could work really closely with and who was constantly available, of course, was amazing. And I felt a lot of support from him to do and to grow in ways that led me to where I, to what I'm doing now, really. That was a foundational support. So that was kind of critical. The challenges there in that particular situation, I think, is in some ways that some primary care providers that are referring to private practices, private GI practices, weren't necessarily used to having nurse practitioners or PAs in the practice setting. And so some were not as friendly, shall we say, to, an NP or a PA. I'm a nurse practitioner. So a nurse practitioner seeing their patient and would write on their, I recall seeing this, like on the referral would write, must see MD only, like underlined three times. And you're like, wait, like I'm actually taking really great care of this patient and I'm spending a lot of time with this patient and this patient's opening up to me in ways about the trauma they experienced going to other providers in the past. Like that's wow. Like it, in some ways you would, those types of things, you realize like it's a title and I understand that, but it would be great to see this as a team-based effort because that, when we're making tough decisions, I am absolutely going to involve my doc. There's no question of what I'm going to do. And seeing that as a partnership would have been really nice. When I switched to an academic-based setting, which is not how most people do it, most people train in academic settings, right? And then
The
they go out
other
to
way.
private practice, and I did it opposite, and mostly that was because I think I just kept, asking questions and my persistence, So I eventually that was where it was going. But going to a tertiary or quaternary care center, in that model, nurse practitioners and PAs are well established within the university setting. They're already established, they're already built into primary care teams, to specialty groups. I would venture to say that almost all of the teams have a nurse practitioner or PA already in their group, so they're used to them. And I just remember thinking that some of those expectations, like it was like everyone's on the same team, like everyone is a valuable member of the team, and that's how these teams work. And it was never even a question about all of that.
Yeah,
So,
you were a pathfinder 17 years ago.
yes.
I mean, you
So.
really were. That was early.
It was early, and I don't think I really recognized it at the time because I just thought, I'm just doing what I should do. I'm just taking care of patients, and I felt like I was doing what I was supposed to be doing, you know, like in the sense of like, I mean, sounds silly to say it's a calling, but like, I think there really was that part of it. And I was just really passionate about it. And so I didn't really think too much of it. But then you switch to a different setting where you have those embedded nurse practitioners and PAs already. And you think, oh, whoa, I didn't really know it was this easy. Like, there is no resistance per se to seeing the nurse practitioner or PA. However, I will also tell you that our model was set up a little differently. And, you know, I've talked about this a little bit in the past where new patients coming into the clinic are seen, you know, in a team-based approach. So they're seen with the nurse practitioner and, you know, the physician at the same, in the same visit. And that kind of sets up this team-based situation where you're seeing both, you know, you're seeing both together. And I think that that is really important because it sets the stage of that from the start. So.
I always tried to make sure that when I received a consult from someone, my APP saw the patient. I saw a little, I might have only been in for a few minutes, but we set the stage so that,
Exactly.
and the introductions are necessary so that the patients know who the team is. Let me break for a second here. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to The Scope with Dr. K. Our guest today is Angelina Collins, nurse practitioner at UC San Diego. So let's focus for the rest of the time on IBD. What do you see as the most significant need of the IBD patient?
There's a lot. I mean, one is like having a good history is really important. Like really understanding as the space becomes more complicated when it. So I should first say that working in a tertiary or quaternary care center, we're seeing the sickest of the sick, right? And that's probably important to just kind of keep in mind because I would sort of jokingly but seriously say my sickest patients in my private practice setting are now my moderate patients in my current setting. And then there was a whole other additional layer of patients that, frankly, I just wasn't even necessarily aware of when I first started.
Nor should you have been, because they should be managed, you know, at the university.
And so that was really eye-opening where, you know, I think I said something, you know, to Bill on the first day we're working together, like, huh, okay. I think, well, the good news is I got through that day. And he's like, you did great. And I was like, did I? Did I? These are really, really sick patients. You know, so there was a big learning curve from that perspective, but that's kind of the fun of it, right? If you're a lifelong learner, you want to just keep learning and learning. So I think there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle when it comes to IBD patients. I think that history is really important because it's a matter of understanding medications patients have been on, what medications were they on? You know, what was the dosing of the medications? How did they do while they were on those medications? Did it work? Did they feel better? But then the other sorts of questions, which is when, especially with IBD patients, when a medication stops working for them, why? You know, do we have an understanding? Was it that was the drug level measured? Did they have antibodies? Was it loss of response despite good drug concentration levels, especially for the anti-TNF medications? Do they have extraintestinal manifestations? What else is going on that may be factors to limit their ability to get to medications? And how does that look? You really need a team-based approach to IBD patients in many ways because the space has become complicated. There's been more medications out there, but understanding, I think, the sequencing of the medications is super important. So understanding the history of the prior medications becomes really important to what we do next and what the next choices are. So to me, getting that right when I first see a patient or if I'm seeing a patient for the first time, that is really important to me.
And there's no way to fast track that. That takes time to obtain that correctly, sequencing it, that takes time. Okay, so I'm sure time is one of your major challenges. What are the biggest things that are challenges for you today?
I think just having enough time with my patients, really and truly, I think that's the piece that I'm hoping to hold on to for as long as I can. You know, I want to be able to talk to their patients about every aspect of what's going on with their IBD and all of those. And I think then the second piece is getting patients to every different team member that they need? You know, do they have psychosocial support? Do they have, what's happening from that perspective? Because often our patients are experiencing anxiety, depression, other things that are really challenging.
And or they have nutritional issues or...
Oh, yeah, that's a whole other piece of the puzzle. Yeah. So nutrition, so seeing a dietitian, you know, is really important and critical. And then, you know, having access to a surgeon who's very well versed and experienced and, you know, is doing a lot of the IBD related surgeries, I think is really important to help prevent complications. But all of those, I mean, and those are just some of the challenges, right? But even the basic things are, you know, a lot of our patients can't get to the first medication that we might like patients to get to. We are fortunate that we have pharmacists embedded in our team. So we are super lucky because, you know, those are our pharmacists are the ones that fight to get, you know, our patients' medications and do denials. And I know not every practice has those, even at, you know, academic centers, but most community practice certainly don't, they don't have pharmacists typically. You know, they may be lucky to have a biologic or an advanced therapy coordinator who's following up on patients. So that I think becomes a real big issue. And things like, you know, in the past, like step therapy and needing to fail certain medications to get to others, like it's such garbage because especially when insurance recommendations don't even match guidelines, like that's ridiculous. And that they have that much power over the decision of which medication we pick is sickening and astonishing. And in the end, that leads to delays in care and poor care. And those aren't always things we can always, we don't always have the power to change those things. Even with the most, even going sometimes to like independent medical reviews, sometimes we cannot get.
Yeah. Cause you're not talking to you're not talking to a gastroenterologist in the review.
That not always and not often, actually, I should say.
No, it's a problem. We're really trying to focus on this at the AGA. And I'm hopeful that we're going to move things in the right direction. Angelina, it's been wonderful to have you on today. You're a breath of fresh air. Don't ever lose your passion and your excitement here because the patients really need it. And now Sonar is going to be in California and hopefully we'll be able to be working together in the future. So I really look forward to it. And I really appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. Thank you for championing APPs, nurse practitioners, and PAs. Like that part to me is just, is the best because without our visibility, I don't know where I would be even. So thank you for that.
I think your future is really positive. Anyway, thank you, Angelina. Thanks to the audience for tuning in. You can access our podcast on most all of the podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, and others. Learn more about the show on the program's page on healthcarenowradio.com. Be sure to follow us on X at SonarMD. We're bringing patients, providers, and payers together to reimagine GI care. Until next time, I'm Dr. K. Stay well.